Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
We would like to thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Thorne and Cross Haunted Nights Live. We're your hosts, Alistair Cross and Tamara Thorne. Thank you for joining us. Before we introduce tonight's guest, I'm going to turn it over to Tamara, who's going to tell you very quickly about what we're working on now.
Well, what we just finished working on. In the next few weeks, we're both going to have new solo novels out. Mine is called Brimstone. It's a coming-of-age story that takes place in 1968 in a little town called Brimstone in Arizona. The Brimstone Grand Hotel, owned by reclusive former movie star Delilah Devine, looms high on Hospital Hill, harboring long-buried family secrets that whisper of unimaginable horrors. Horrors that will echo down through generations. Within the walls of the Brimstone Grand, the past has come back to life, and Holly Tremaine and her grandmother Delilah are faced with an ancient familial evil that rages just below the old hotel's serene facade, an evil that won't rest until it possesses Holly, body, mind, and soul. Okay, it was almost perfect that time. Okay, and Alistair's new release is The Silver Dagger. It's book two in the Vampires of Crimson Cove series, and it picks up where The Crimson Corset, book one, leaves off. Life in Crimson Cove has been good to the Coulter brothers since Gretchen Van Treese was staked and her horde of vampires scattered. But when she rises from the grave, the brothers are torn apart, their lives and the peace between them shattered. Meanwhile, a serial killer is stalking the little mountain town, leaving a trail of blood that leads to a truth Sheriff Ethan Hunter doesn't want to face. The streets are no longer safe, nor are the forested paths, for a new and unknowable evil has come to Crimson Cove, and everyone, vampire and human alike, must come together in order to survive Alistair. To survive Alistair.
All right. And again, the first book in that series is The Crimson Corset. That's available at Amazon.com. And if you're a vampire fan, you might also want to check out its companion novel, Darling Girls, which is a collaboration between Tamara and I. We combined our vampire worlds. It was a lot of fun. Very quickly, again, this is Thorne and Cross Haunted Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com, or you can visit our mutual blog at thorneandcross.wordpress.com. If you tweet, our handles are at Cross Alistair and at Tamara Thorne. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. All right, tonight's guest, Vanessa Savage, is a graphic designer, novelist, and illustrator. She has twice been awarded a Writer's Bursary by Literature Wells, most recently for The Woman in the Dark. She won the Myriad Editions First Crimes competition in 2016, and her work has been highly commended in the International Fiction Prize, shortlisted for the Harry Bowling Prize, the Caledonia Fiction Prize, and longlisted for the Bath Novel Award. Without further ado, Vanessa Savage, welcome to the show, and I apologize if I butchered your bio.
Absolutely fine. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I've been really looking forward to it.
Okay. We're good at mouthos, both of us.
This is a very important lesson for me, and I'm usually really good about it, but it's practice first, because you might come across words that you're not real familiar with. Well, I didn't, so I apologize for that.
That's okay. I mean, it could have been worse, because I live in Wales, and some of the words here with kind of double L's at the beginning of the play
right.
Things and things could have really thrown you, but luckily there were none of those in the bio.
No. And you didn't say bursitis instead of bursary, so that was good.
I know. And we looked at this earlier, and I'm like, no, I got it.
He listened to me read it out loud, and then he got it.
Yeah. A lot of good that did. You read it. Anyway. Anyway, the important thing is you are here and you have a book, The Woman in the Dark. This is your first novel, and we have not had a chance to read it yet, but we both have copies of it. We've looked through it. We were looking through it earlier. It's right up our alley. We're really excited to start in on it. But and so why don't you tell us a little bit about The Woman in the Dark?
Okay, so The Woman in the Dark is my debut suspense novel. It's set in South Wales here in the UK, and it tells the story of the Walker family, who sort of begin the story already in crisis. Sarah is recovering from a breakdown after the death of her mother. Her teenage children are having kind of problems of their own, and Patrick, the husband and father, is just trying to keep it all together. Then after Sarah takes what she insists is an accidental overdose, he comes up with what he thinks is the perfect solution to all their problems. We need a fresh start. And his childhood home, this beautiful idyllic house by the sea, has come up for sale. And he thinks this is the answer to all their problems. But there is a catch, because this lovely idyllic house that he's been describing has, since he lived there, become notorious and known locally as the Murder House, after a family were brutally killed there 15 years earlier, and it's lain empty ever since. But he's insistent that they can make it into the perfect family home that it once was. But pretty much from as soon as they move in, Sarah's not so sure. Someone is watching the house and leaving mysterious gifts on the doorstep. The children are convinced the house is haunted. There are unexplained things going on, strange cold spots and noises in the house. And also, Patrick begins to change. And the longer they live there, the more he sort of changes from the loving husband that he was. Sort of tensions begin to rise. And as Sarah looks into the history of the house and everything that happened there, she starts to get more and more scared and wonder how long it will be before more blood is spilled in the murder house.
Very nice.
I love this.
Yeah, this is right up our alley. I'm totally excited.
Yeah. Your wonderful publicist really hooked us with her. Description it has threads like Netflix's The Haunting of Hill House, which is nothing The Haunting, and The Shining and all this. So it sounds like it's suspense thriller, but it also has haunting aspects, psychological or not.
It does, yes. There's a lot of kind of unexplained and strange things that happen in this house. And as the characters kind of go through this and experience all these things, you're never quite sure, and the reader is never quite sure whether it's things that are in their mind, because obviously they're aware of the history of the house and the terrible things that have happened there, or whether these things are really happening and whether the house itself is sort of working on them and acting to kind of change Patrick, and sort of they all begin to change as they live longer in the house.
I have a question that you don't have to answer unless you want to.
Okay.
Alistair and I did a thriller that we thought was going to be a straight thriller called Mother. It's psychological. And there is, toward the end, there is something in there that to this day we don't know, but there may be a ghost in the book. And we've discussed it, and neither of us know for sure, which makes us really happy. But you don't need to tell us anything, but do you know if there's a ghost in your book or not, or multiple, you know, if it's really haunted or not? We don't know what art.
Yeah. Yes, because I have kind of left that open-ended, but I think as I wrote it, I think that there's something going on. There's something going on with this house. Because as I was sort of developing the book and researching the book and doing all my notes, the house itself kind of became a character in its own right, as much as the living character.
Yeah.
So as I was developing the house, I kind of thought about its history. And even before the murders happened there and before Patrick lived there, like who would have lived there before and what happened. And so in my mind, the house itself is a house with a really bad history. And I do think, because sometimes you kind of can walk into a property and you get a really bad feeling about it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's what this house has, and I do think that there is definitely something there. There is definitely something a little supernatural.
Oh,
lurking
good.
This house.
I was reading about the making of the movie, The Haunting, the 1960 movie, and that the director assumed that it was purely psychological, and he said that to Shirley Jackson, and she was just said, "Oh, if you say so." And that made me happy because she knew it was haunted.
Yeah. I think, and it's always, you kind of, as you're reading things or watching things, if you kind of read something in the cold light of day, and things can be explained away. But, if you're reading it late at night, on your own in a house,
right.
stormy night, suddenly things seem a lot more real and more likely.
Exactly. Right. Do you have any inspiration from having been in a haunted house yourself? Do you have any ghost stories?
Well, only one thing that kind of happened quite a few years ago. I was on holiday with friends, and we were staying in a very old cottage in Cornwall, in the south of England, sort of, about 400-year-old mm-hmm. cottage. So it was already, in the middle of nowhere, in this sort of down this lane, so it was very dark and very quiet. Mm-hmm. And one night I kind of went up to bed earlier than everybody else and went into my room and got into bed and turned the light off. And I hadn't had time to fall asleep. I literally had just lain down and closed my eyes, and there was a voice, and it whispered, and it was very, very close to my ear, and it just whispered, "Vanessa." And it was sinister and it was terrifying. And I know I wasn't asleep because I literally just closed my eyes. And I'm convinced that if I'd opened my eyes, and obviously if I was a character in a book, or if I was a character in a film, I would have and jumped up to face whatever was there waiting for me. But in real life, I actually just kind of pulled the covers up over my head and lay there quaking until I heard the others come up. But that was real. That voice was real. I did not imagine that voice.
We had an experience that there's the hotel, the real hotel where my new novel is set, has that people will be awakened in the middle of the night hearing their voices whispered in their ears.
We've
given the desk instructions to let us have the room if they want it out. But the guy went left on the couch and didn't tell anybody until in the lobby until in the morning, "I heard my voice." And the maids wouldn't go in because they heard their voices or their names whispered. That's a fascinating phenomenon.
That is really scary, isn't it?
I love it. Yeah, of course, it's never happened to me, but
I hope it doesn't happen again. I think I'll kind of just stick to writing that in fiction or kind of watching it on film.
Right, that's a good place for it. Yes,
it is.
Oh.
Now, this book, this is one of those, as I said, this is like right up our alley. And I got to tell you, mm-hmm. I've read, and I know Tamara has too, as I'm sure a lot of listeners have, I've read, hundreds of haunted house stories. They're just so mm-hmm. fascinating. And, quite honestly, I'm always impressed by the way people put, different writers put their own unique spins on them. I don't get tired of it. I think it's a great genre. Do you have any explanation as to why you think the genre, the haunted house kind of genre, is so intriguing even still?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes with fiction, you've always got that kind of yearning to know that there is something, it's that whole kind of life after death, that there is mm-hmm. something more out there. And I think as well with fiction, mm-hmm. sometimes it's like a safe way to be scared, because as I was saying before, you don't really want to kind of confront a ghost. You don't really want to hear a tapping on the window late at night to open the curtains to find a vampire or a ghost outside. But with fiction, it's kind of, you get that adrenaline thrill of kind of reading these really terrifying things, but you've also got that kind of, the safety catch. You can just close the book and you can kind of just put it aside. I think people like to be scared, don't they? I think that's why we talk like horror films and that kind of haunted house books, that kind of delicious shiver up your spine.
Right, exactly.
I'm wondering, just even though I haven't read this yet, I'll start it tomorrow night. I'm almost done with another book.
Oh, great.
You have What this is reminding me of is certain books, like, have you ever read The House Next Door by Ann Rivers Sidden?
Oh, no, I haven't. No. I'll have to make a note.
You might enjoy that one. This is House's character as well. And
yeah.
I wouldn't call it psychological exactly. It's riveting. She doesn't normally write paranormal. But that's very much a House's character. And let's talk about that a little bit. What are your influences for that? I know Stephen King has always talked about Place's character, and we totally buy into that.
Yeah.
Is that how that came to be with you, or how did you figure that out?
Yeah,
with
character. Yeah, I think every time I write, I always have to have obviously the characters in place, but setting is always very important. Mm-hmm. And I think when I was writing this book, or coming up with kind of ideas for it, I kind of had the family and their story in mind, but they were just sort of drifting in my head, just sort of notes in a notebook, and there was something missing. And then I had another note in another notebook where I'd been reading an article, a newspaper article about a real life kind of murder house, as it were, where these terrible crimes had happened and that house had been destroyed. And it just set off, just triggered a little sort of what if moment, what if it wasn't destroyed, and what if you moved into it? You know, could you get past those terrible things that happened there, and could you actually make it into a happy family home? Especially if it was even beyond that, it wasn't just a house; it was actually somewhere that you'd lived as a child and had really happy memories of. And so I was just sort of fascinated by that idea of what, you know, can the sort of history of a place and all these memories, can they actually almost sort of saturate into the wall so that as you walk in, it's the house becomes almost living. Yeah. So that kind of just an idea that fascinated me. And I think as soon as I kind of came up with the idea for the murder house, the story came alive. It was the character that was missing. It was the kind of other antagonist that was needed to make the story real to me.
Wow. Nice. You're very much a character writer, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah. I think that whole sort of psychological suspense genre, being able to really get inside a character's mind, I love that. So
yeah.
I think. Yeah. So
we
this
agree.
Is mostly written. I wrote this one in first person. I used to write a lot in third, like close third person, but this one's sort of first person present tense. So you really do. You're right inside the character's mind, and you're kind of experiencing everything as Sarah, the main viewpoint character. You're experiencing it as she's experiencing it. I think that kind of adds to the fear as well, and the rising tension with a suspense novel.
We have never gone out of third person, and what you say is fascinating. I'm guessing to both of us, right, Alistair?
It is. It's
fun to write the immediacy. Yeah.
I think it just sort of.
Because before this one, I'd never written in first person either. It just seemed right as I began writing. And obviously it works because it's the first one published. It sort of just clicked, I think, as soon as I kind of got into Sarah's head and was writing in that first person.
Was it strange just being in one person's head? We jump point of view constantly. I've done that since I was first published in the early 90s. You know. That's part of my pleasure. But
yeah, well, originally when I started, but I mean, obviously, you know, the great thing I think about a debut novel is you have all the time in the world to write it, and you can write as many drafts as you want because I wasn't on any deadlines. So in sort of earlier drafts, I actually had three different viewpoints. I was also writing from, I had Sarah's viewpoint, but I also had Mia and Joe, the two children. But the novel was just getting kind of bigger and bigger and a little bit sprawling. And I had to kind of make a decision to sort of cut that down. I also have, there is a second viewpoint character in there, as a sort of unknown narrator who's actually the person watching the house. We don't find out until much later who is watching the house. So you have that element in there as well. But I quite often, when I'm sort of researching, I'll sort of write several scenes that might never make it in there from different characters' point of view, and to, until I'm sure that I'm writing from the right character's point of view.
Right, right.
That's fascinating.
Now, you said something that this was the first one that got published and that you have written before. So what have you written before this, and are you going to try to get that published as well still?
Well, I kind of came sort of a winding path into writing kind of crime and suspense. I started out writing very short fiction, short stories and flash fiction. And then the first idea I had for a novel was actually not even in the same genre. It was kind of a women's fiction. There was a romantic element in there. I kind of struggled with it. I think that's why it's still unpublished, because I think what I realized was I wanted my characters to kill each other rather than kiss each other. And so it was once I realized that kind of things clicked, and I realized, no, I need to be writing crime and suspense. I don't, you know, ditch the romance.
I love that.
Although, you know, I think a lot of that kind of domestic suspense is, I mean, it is about relationships. It's just not about the happy ever after type of relationships.
Yeah. Right. I love that.
Fascinating.
I love that.
Yeah, me too.
What kind of stuff do you read for pleasure? Like, what's your go-to?
Oh, God, I read, I'm looking around now, I read all sorts of stuff. I've mentioned before, I love Stephen King, and I love a lot of, like, Dean Koontz and James Herbert. But then I also read, I loved the Charlaine Harris story series, the True Blood series. God, all sorts. Who else have I got? Oh, I'm just looking at my shelves now. Kim Harrison. I like Kim Harrison books. But I just think Stephen King is probably my favorite. Lots of thriller writers.
She comes on our show. Yeah.
Oh, does she?
We've had Charlaine Harris and Kim Harrison, both great people. Mm-hmm. And I agree, I like their work too. I read all across, we both do actually, all across the board. I'll read old gothic romances just as quick as anything.
I think ever since childhood I've basically read anything I can get my hands on.
Pretty much, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. What are some of your favorite Stephen King novels?
Naming my favorites. I love The Stand. It, The Shining, obviously. I also love Doctor Sleep as well, being able to that kind of follow up then to The Shining and seeing what had happened to Danny. That was great. And I'm really looking forward to his new one that's out in September, I think. The Institute sounds fantastic. That sounds really good. Got a bit of a Stranger Things vibe going on in there in the synopsis, and that sounds really good. I just love.
It does.
Yeah. Probably read every single one of his books, I think.
He's great.
Exactly. I have to commend whoever did the cover art for this book, The Woman in the Dark. This cover is the cover art for it. I always notice, you know, they say don't judge a book by its cover. I say, oh, nonsense. Yes, you do. And this is great cover. This is great because it's very simple, and at first glance it's intriguing, but as you start looking, it's, you know, a hand pulling away wallpaper, and then in the wood, we've been bad, I've been bad, I've been very bad. This is really I love it. Did you have any it seems like authors have varying degrees of say. How did your cover come to be?
I didn't know. I didn't have a say in it. I was very – I mean, it's quite difficult because obviously I'm a graphic designer doing, you know, sort of daytime. Right. So when I'm not writing, I'm a graphic designer. So I was really excited about seeing the covers. But I did leave it to my publishers to – obviously they're the book marketing experts at what would work. But I was so thrilled with the cover because it – I mean, it's perfect, everything about it. I mean, when you read the book, the words that I've been bad, I've been very, very bad, become significant, and the wallpaper of being peeled away, and even the wallpaper itself.
Yeah.
when the family move into the house, it's been sort of left abandoned for 15 years. So it is the decor leaves something to be desired. So that kind of old fashioned wallpaper was, I really could imagine that in the house. So it was, the designers on the cover, I think they did a fantastic job. I love the cover.
It's beautiful.
It's fantastic. I do too. Yeah. It is.
It's been really interesting.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, because it's the books come out in a few different languages in a few different countries, and each of the covers have been completely different, but they've all sort of captured something different from the novel really, really beautifully. But they're all very, very different. So it's been absolutely fascinating to see them all.
Right.
Ah, must be. Yes.
So now if somebody goes and they buy The Woman in the Dark by Vanessa Savage, what are you hoping that they will come away with when they finish the book?
I am hoping that they will race through it, having, not be able to put it down, that they will find it a creepy, scary read, but that's sort of tension filled and page turning, and that just, they kind of close that book wishing it hadn't finished and wishing they could carry on reading.
Perfect.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And also finally, what is on the agenda next? Are you working on anything new? Is there a possibility of a follow-up? What's your plans?
I have a second suspense novel. It's going through the editing stage at the moment. It's another standalone, so it's not connected to this one at all, not part of a series. It's untitled at the moment, but it tells the story of Tess, whose sister died in a terrible accident 10 years earlier on the night that their father got remarried. And then present day, Tess gets a phone call to say that her stepmother is now dying and she needs to return home to the place that she hasn't really visited since her sister died. It was a tragic accident in the woods behind her house. It was a place that carries really terrible memories for her. So now she has to go back knowing that all the people that were there at the wedding will be there as well. And then she sees her sister, her dead sister, appears to her in the night, and she's not sure if it's a really vivid dream, a hallucination, or if it really is her sister appearing to her. But she sort of just keeps saying the same things over and over again. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't an accident. And then when she goes back, so obviously she's full of suspicion, what's going on? And then another body is found in the woods, and it all unfolds from there.
Oh, that sounds
great. Now I
want to hope they'll come back and we hope they'll come back and tell us.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, I'd love to. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, I gotta say, we do have a little we do have some technical difficulties sometimes doing overseas shows, but from what I can tell, it sounded really good, and I'll give it a listen when we're done, and I will be sending you the link. And before we let you go, could you tell the listeners where they can find out more about you and your work? Where do they go?
Yes, indeed. Well, my website is vanessasavage.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at VVSavage or on Facebook at Vanessa Savage Author. And you can buy the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I think anywhere, places like Target and Walmart online. Anywhere you can buy books online, I think.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not sure of all the places in the US where you can buy it. I was going to start naming ones in the UK, but that's not no good.
Yeah, just go online. You'll find it. It's The Woman in the Dark by Vanessa Savage. You'll find it. Again, I got to tell you, this is right up our alley. I'm very excited to start reading it.
Yeah.
I have looked through it. Not that that totally counts, but I've looked through it enough to know that I'm going to love it. And I think readers of this genre are totally going to love it. So, and I am excited about the book that you're working on now. So keep in touch. And you know what? When that comes out, you let us know, and we will happily have you back. You're
definitely
fantastic.
Yeah.
It's been great meeting you.
Yeah, it was fabulous. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Oh, You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights
and sweet screams.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.